On this Friday, we are joined on the phone. It is the first Friday of the month, which means we have Representative Doug Blex. And Mr. Blex, how are you doing this morning, sir? Actually, hang on just a second. Uh-huh. Now, there we go. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right, yeah, how are you doing this morning?
Well, good, great. Can you hear me good?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Well, we'll talk a little bit about the total tax collections for July. I usually cover that the first of the month every last few years, and our actual total tax collections was up 3.5% above the estimates, which is 7.3% above a year ago in July, so that was good news. Breaking that down a little bit, individual income tax was 2.7% above and 6.4% above July of a year ago in 2025. So, again, retail sales and compensating use tax are holding good. That was actually 5.1% above the estimate and 8.1%. So, overall, our really economy is doing good, even though inflation's out there big time. People are still spending money and buying things, and so that's certainly a good sign for Kansas, and the economic outlook is fairly good. You know, as long as we continue to bring in more than the estimates, that's a good thing.
Yes, it is. That's always it's always good to see, especially when you look at the trends, like you mentioned, where it's up compared to years in the past. So, what's some other things? I know we kind of talked a little bit. You want to talk a little bit about PACs this morning?
Well, we've all went through our first election of this year, at least the primary, and that a lot of the voters get those big, shiny, oversized postcards in their mailbox and kind of try to convince you who to vote for or not, and kind of wanted to cover some of the old saying, follow the money, is probably the best advice around, and PACs are created, which is a political action committee, and there's actually three types of PACs that can be created, or pretty common anyhow. There's a couple more, but there's a traditional PAC, which is limited on the amount of money they can raise, and the amount of money they can directly give to a candidate's campaign when they form that PAC. And then there's what's called a super PAC, which it gets a little bit scary, and this can raise unlimited amounts, many from corporations, unions, wealthy donors, and they cannot have any direct contact with a candidate. And sometimes we get those postcards, voters will get those mailers in there, and actually those PACs are prohibited from talking to a candidate like myself. We can't have any interactions. And they generally spend their money that they raise in an unlimited amount now on political ads, and that results in a lot of those either postcards or TV media ads. They can either support or attack a particular candidate, and really sometimes they think they can do beneficial, but sometimes it ends up as an individual candidate that ends up being worse, and so it's hard to decide which one of those is actually legitimate, which one's really telling you the whole truth. And then there's a third PAC that's called a leadership PAC, and that's basically formed by individual politicians to help campaigns for other candidates. And that's reportable, and it's limited in a dollar amount. And, of course, in the super PACs, the only limitations they have must submit a donor report to the Federal Election Committee, any itemizing any contribution over $200. Now, here's where comes in the bad part of of politics and what's commonly called in circles called dark money. And dark money pass-through is a donor can remain anonymous, and they can give money to a 501c4, and that's basically a social welfare organization, or a shell LLC company. And so those organizations do not have to disclose their individual donors or that amount. And then what they do, they pass money through to the super PACs, and some of the super PACs will be formed immediately before an election, maybe a few weeks before an election, and they can spend millions of dollars out there, but really they legally delay their official financial disclosures until after the voting has already occurred. So that's where it gets kind of really, in a lot of ways, bad, because, you know, you can be flooded with postcards about how bad this candidate is, and really you have no time to rebut it or, you know, challenge it, and all of a sudden the election's over. They've impacted an election, and life goes on, and it's not really a fair playing field. And some of us seen some of that in our recent constitutional amendment that passed in Montgomery County but failed at about 60% across the state, and which would be to elect Supreme Court judges by the people as opposed to the lawyer recommendation. And a lot of those postcards had things like Planned Parenthood on them, and that was basically a 501c3-4. And then you have another one that is a 501c5, which is primarily used, and I'll just hit the top part of this, used by labor unions to influence voters. And then you have a 501c6 that basically includes businesses, and that would be kind of a primary one, be like Chamber of Commerce. And none of the donations are legally tax deductible, so people just contribute money. But the contributing to them shell organizations to some degree, millionaires and billionaires can actually create a lot. And as I give that an example on constitutional amendment, only 41% of the money was from Kansas donations. New York kicked in through for a group called Super PAC called Kansas United for Impartial Courts. Planned Parenthood gave them slightly over $1 million. ACLU, America's Civil Liberties Union, contributed $1.2 million. And so we had a total at Kansas United for Impartial Courts of over $10.5 million was contributed. And out of that, 41%, again, it was from Kansas. $3.4 million come from New York. And George Soros, individuals, wealthy billionaires, he contributed individually $400,000. So kind of highlighting what goes on in the political world. We have a few groups like Kansas Appleseed that contributed $115,000, and Loud Light, which is a liberal organization, about $11,000. So we kind of see trying to enlighten people and voters about how this process works, that sometimes you kind of got to step back and take a breath. And the old saying, follow the money. Sometimes you get those nice postcards and those super PACs that form real quickly. You don't really know, you're not even legally reported because it just formed. So that's kind of a bad process that voters, I guess, have to endure.
That's why, you know, you gotta listen and on those ads and and read on those postcards, you know, I'm, you know, when it's candidate specific, generally the candidate will say, I'm, you know, this is so-and-so and I support this message, or you get to look and see, because they'll disclose there at the end of those ads and stuff, you know, who paid for it or how it got funded or any of that stuff. So it's always important to pay attention to that part of any of those political ads.
Yeah, it's a tough decision, and like say, you just really want to do the background search on an individual, because it's easy to drop a postcard in the mail that can be, you know, half truth or maybe not even close to that, you know, just misleading voters in a lot of ways, and we see a lot of campaigns, and you know, I'll kind of highlight data centers, and I kind of fell for a little bit of this in my vote on that, but in Kansas, and there's a lot of controversy now on data centers. Should we have them? Should we not have moratorium? And are they regulated? And really, it started in Kansas as Senate Bill, actually 51, and Senate Bill 98 started out as a license plate bill, a commemorative license plate bill, which is normally real benign. Kansas has almost too many license plates out on the cars and the roads there, but it's pretty well easy road to passage. And then that went through a gut and go in the Senate, and all of a sudden data centers become a principle in that bill. And what's happening that we give the data centers a 20-year exemption on sales tax. Now, what that means to local taxpayers is the fact that the data centers now, for any construction activities, anything they buy locally or anywhere else in the state, they're exempted from sales tax, which at the state level is 6.5%, and certainly our county and city taxes may kick in there, although the cities can give an exemption on that too. So they're exempted for 20 long years. And then if we look at even more of an issue, cities and counties can issue industrial revenue bonds, which is can give a property tax exemption for 10 years. And so if a city, say the city of Coffeyville or Independence or, you know, Winfield went in and had a data center come in and they wanted to issue an industrial revenue bond and to benefit the entice the data center to come in, they could be exempted from property taxes for 10 years. So if you're looking at who's paying the bills, the individual taxpayers gets hit again pretty hard, because data centers can be, by state law, now they're exempted from all sales tax for 20 years, and then a city or county can exempt them from issue an industrial revenue bond for 10 years of property tax. So Legislative Research Department done an audit on the impact of industrial revenue bonds, and I'm talking across the entire states, in about the last 20 years, Kansas has issued $18.3 billion in industrial revenue bonds in that time period. Now, what that means is that's an exemption from local property taxes that they determined that's $1.1 billion that the state of Kansas never collected in property tax that somebody else has to pick up. And if you look at that from a standpoint of even our education system, 40% of that would have gone to schools. So that's a huge benefit to a lot of those companies, but it also has a huge impact upon our local taxpayers and certainly our local schools and those people that generate. Because whenever we give somebody a deal to entice maybe a company to come in, for economic benefit, it's a tough decision. Do we really get a benefit, or do the local taxpayers get hit harder than they anticipated?
All right, Doug, well, I appreciate you coming on this morning and talking with us. Is there anything, we got about a minute here or so, anything else you want to add as we kind of wrap up?
Well, we'll talk a little bit about, I try to cover bills, we had a water mapping bill, House Bill 2477, that would require if an individual diverted. By landowners within a half a mile radius. And then I look at the number of bills. For the last 15 years, the Kansas legislature has introduced about roughly an average of about 1,400 bills each year. That'll vary some years, a lot less, some even more, but normally about 1,500 bills. And out of those 1,500 bills, there's a little over 300 that will normally get go through the process and be completed. And then of that, that may create, you know, like 150, like this year we had 157 new laws that was created. And if we look at the committees, that most of those that are the most active out of those bills in the recent session, tax committee had 98. The Judiciary Committee had 77, Health and Human Services 67, which I serve on that committee, and State and Federal Affairs 57. So some committees are heavyweight committees. A lot of bills and a lot of issues go through those. But I want to thank everybody for getting out and vote. And it's, you know, our right. We need to really do that and not stay home and do some other things. Voting is important. We need to know who we're voting for and do a little bit of research.
All right, Representative Blex, again, thank you for coming on, and enjoy your weekend, and we'll talk to you next month.
Yep, let's pray for more rain. May God bless us.
All right, thank you. Yeah, we definitely need the rain. It's been dry. Take care, sir. All right, well, that'll do it for us here in the 8 o'clock hour. We'll have a look at news coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. We'll have a look at news coming up here in the 8 o'clock hour, along with a look at weather. It is 75. There's a chance of rain here this morning as we move throughout our morning here in the area. You listen to the Mighty 690 KGGF. I'm Matt Jordan. This is your closing cash grain market report for Thursday, August 6th. From